You are listening to episode number 261 of Better Blood Sugars with Delaine MD. Welcome to Better Blood Sugars with Delaine MD, where you can learn strategies to lower your blood sugars and improve your overall health. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. Ladies, if you know you're capable of doing badass things at work and for your family, but you're confused and frustrated with why you can't seem to stop eating the chocolate cake, this podcast is for you. Let's talk. Hey there, and welcome to the podcast. Thank you for taking some time for your health today, and thank you for choosing to spend it with me. Today, we are going to talk about fiber. We are going to talk about all things fiber and gut microbiome, really, because when we're talking about fiber, we are talking about the gut microbiome. If you have not already done it, go to DelaineMD.com/better, BETTER. And get your 14 days to better blood sugars guide. There has been an upgraded version of the guide. So this has been out for probably 6 months, 14 days to better blood sugars. And it had all of your carbohydrate counts. It had 14 menus of, you know, foods to eat for 14 days. And it was great and wonderful. And women were emailing me and telling me how amazing their blood sugars were doing. It's just been very powerful. But as I've started to look at exercise and how important exercise is, I've realized that we probably need to also have protein included on the macronutrient count. And then also fiber. Like, clearly fiber has been tightly correlated and tied to improvement in blood sugars, improvement in diabetes, improvement in metabolic health. So it makes tons of sense that we add that component, that macronutrient, if you want to call fiber a macronutrient. I know it's not one of our classic macronutrients, but I think it counts. I really think it's probably a more relevant F as far as fiber goes versus fat, which is the more classic micronutrient that we count. So we typically count, of course, carbohydrates, protein, and fat. This new guide, this upgraded version of the 14 Days to Better Blood Sugar guide, counts carbohydrates, proteins, and also fiber. So if you haven't already done it, go and download that guide. When you sign up for it, you're going to come to a form. You'll put your email address in there. The PDF for the guide will be sent to you, but there will also be a bright green button for you to click on, and that will open that PDF in your browser right there, right then, ready for you to get started. So seriously, go get it right now. It's very powerful. Women are emailing me and telling me the amazing results that they're getting. So these macronutrient requirements, just so that we touch on this, I made myself a note. I wanted to make sure you know the macronutrient that the guide focuses on, again, is protein, carbohydrates, and fiber. The goal for these, so there is no carbohydrate goal. That is something you probably want to restrict. And not meaning like you're restricting it down to zero. That's not what I'm saying. It's just if anything is going to give you a boundary, what you want to work within and do less than, you want to do less carbohydrates. But what you want to make sure you're doing is getting 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight of protein every day. So if your ideal body weight is 150 pounds, then you're going to want to shoot for 150 grams of protein in a single day. And then for fiber, your goal is to really get about 30 grams of fiber each day. And then, like, really, we should probably be shooting for 50. So what I have found is if I am shooting for these two goals, and again, these foods need to come in whole foods. I don't want you drinking protein shakes to get all of your protein. That is not ideal. I mean, sometimes we have to do it. That's fine, but it's just not ideal. But the fiber, I don't want you taking FiberCon or Miralax or any of those things necessarily to get to your fiber count. Really, the fiber count and the protein should be received or obtained or brought into your body and into your diet in whole food form. And the reason that this is so important, if you follow these two guidelines, there is very little room in your appetite, in your belly, in your body for anything else. It's easy to cut out all of the stuff that's making you sick when you're so full on the stuff that your body needs. I highly encourage you to shoot for these macronutrient levels. So again, you're going to want 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight in protein and 30 grams at least maybe shooting closer to 50 grams of fiber each day. And then with meeting those two in whole food forms, you're naturally going to have a limitation on how many carbs you're eating. So I think that that's a great guideline and just so powerful. If you do that, you are going to see your blood sugars drop rather rapidly. So let's talk about fiber and why it's so important. Fiber is, it's one of the most important role that I think that it has, and this is my humble opinion, is that fiber feeds your gut microbiome. So the gut microbiome has a few really important roles that have been discovered over the years, but the research on this is really quite new. So I want you to recognize that the roles we've identified as what it's doing that's so important in our health and our body, they're unlikely to have been fully described in the medical literature and the scientific literature at this point. This information that I'm going to present to you today is likely going to be found to be incomplete and maybe even inadequate in the future. I'm giving you the information as I currently understand it, as has been made available to me as I have found it. Fiber has a couple different important roles that I want to talk about today. I want to talk about how it works in our body, what it's doing, and then also what we do dietarily to either improve our fiber, like how do we get more fiber and how do we protect really our gut microbiome? What can we do with our diet to feed the gut microbiome? What can we do with our diet to protect the gut microbiome? I am going to talk a little bit about some studies that have been, some of them are old, some of them are new, just some studies, some interesting pieces of research information that have been revealed in the medical literature over the last decade. And then lastly, I will give some recommendations on places, on other scientists that you can follow to get more information about fiber and kind of to keep your eye on them so you can get the latest and greatest. These are the people who are studying fiber and the gut microbiome and the importance of it. And so they're going to be on the, you know, leading edge of that information. So definitely watching them is going to be helpful. So you have soluble and insoluble fiber. Soluble fiber is digested and absorbed by the human being, and then insoluble fiber is not. It's actually digested by the gut microbiome. So the soluble stuff that's absorbed, that's digested and absorbed by a human being, that's thought to improve cholesterol and improve blood sugars directly. And it makes us feel full longer. It does all sorts of things. And that's how it's thought to work. But insoluble fiber, again, it's not digestible by the human being, but the gut microbiome digests it. And what it does has been really, really fascinating. So it's creating a number of different chemicals and molecules, and also, you know, it keeps our microbiome healthy, and that has a role. So we're going to talk about what those are, what those roles are, and what's happening there. The basic part of fiber that, you know, the soluble and insoluble business is what most of us have been taught. And we're taught that really the primary source of getting these are in fruits and vegetables. And it's not wrong. That is a place that we get fiber. But having upgraded and like updated the food guide, the 14 Days to Better Blood Sugars food guide, what I've realized is fruits and vegetables are not where you're going to get the majority of it. There's a really shockingly small amount of fiber in our fruits and vegetables. Where we really get the fiber count up is when we're adding whole grains in real whole grain forms, not bread that has the word whole grains written on it, but in true whole grains, in seeds and in nuts. These have far more fiber than fruits and vegetables do. So on the 14-day guide, frequently I had to add chia seeds or flax seeds or maybe pepitas, or those are pumpkin seeds, or sunflower seeds to increase the fiber count in a day to make sure you're getting to the 30 grams. And again, you really should be getting to 50 grams. 30 is really the lower level of it. And it wasn't more broccoli. Like, nobody can eat that much broccoli. It wasn't more carrots. It was that we needed something more. So do understand that what we've been taught about fiber probably needs to be revisited and upgraded a little bit. So fiber feeds the gut microbiome. That's really, for me, that's, in my humble opinion, I think this is the most important role that fiber in our diet has. It seems to be playing, you know, each year I always say there's more and more information, more and more medical literature being released. Each year we seem to see a far larger role that the gut microbiome is playing in our health, and therefore the role of fiber is playing in our health. The gut microbiome has multiple roles in our body and our health. And certainly, you know, again, the more literature that comes out, the more roles and the more functions we're going to see. I want to review those, and then I want to, again, touch on some experimental evidence that really illustrates the importance of the gut microbiome. And again, whenever I talk about gut microbiome, I'm talking about the fiber we eat because the fiber we eat feeds our gut microbiome. So what does the gut microbiome do? One of the main roles that it has is it protects our gut. So if you think about our gut, the lining of our intestine, so it's a big tube, right? It goes from our mouth to our bottom. And the lining of that tube in certain places is very fragile. It is a single cell layer thick. And if you think of your skin, even the thinnest parts of our skin are multiple hundreds of cell layers, thousands probably of cell layers thick, depending on how thick the skin is. Okay. So when you think about the gut lining being a single cell layer thick, it's very, very thin and it's very, very fragile. Recognize the inside of the tube of our gut is actually considered outside of our body. It is considered to be a part of our body, a section of our body, a room in our body that's outside actually of our body. It's not considered to be part of the inside of the body. It keeps the things that we eat outside of our body and then allows it. That stuff that we eat, the nutrients that we eat, to be separated from the food, from the things that we don't want in our body, and the nutrients to then be absorbed again through the single cell layer, this very thin layer. It has to be thin so that we can absorb those nutrients. That absorption happens in a very controlled fashion that involves cells that accept it to like cell or not cells, but proteins on the surface of the cell that says, yes, we need you. And it binds to it and brings it inside the cell, passes it through the cell. And then on the other side of the cell where our bloodstream is, there's a different protein that binds it and then allows it into the bloodstream. It's a very controlled mechanism, or is supposed to be a very controlled mechanism to bring nutrients into our bloodstream out of our gut, remembering always that our gut is on the outside of our body. So this barrier, this single cell layer needs to be very thin, this single cell, so that we can do this absorption. It's very fragile and it's very easily damaged. So chemicals in our food, like food colorings, food preservatives, that can damage the single cell layer. And then recognize when it's healthy and working correctly, this single cell layer keeps things like bacteria and viruses and fungal particles and all sorts of things that are really not meant to be inside of our bodies or into our bloodstream. That single cell layer, when it's healthy, keeps them outside. The bacterial layer, that microbiome layer, lays on top of the single cell layer of our gut intestine and it protects it. It adds a protective layer of this very fragile single cell layer. So when we eat foods or food additives that damage the gut microbiome, those bacteria that live on top of that single cell layer, when we eat things that damage that, we open our gut lining up to be damaged as well. So when there's not a healthy gut microbiome, what ends up happening is there are breaks between the cells of that gut lining. That single cell layer gets broken, and that's what we call leaky gut. And it allows all sorts of things to come into our bloodstream. So these are things that will set off an inflammatory process, right? So we have inflamed gut, IBS, inflammatory bowel syndrome, or IBD, inflammatory bowel disease. Lots of these things are highly related to our gut microbiome, but more importantly, that gut lining being. Like having the integrity, like being still functional and keeping things outside that are meant to be outside. If not, they get inside these chemicals, these things. I mean, it can be particles, it can be all sorts of things. They get inside our bloodstream and they set off an inflammatory response. They set off an immune response. They can set off an allergic response. All of these things are normal responses to things that are not meant to be inside our bloodstream. Okay. These are protective mechanisms that our body has to protect us from the things that we're not meant to be exposed to all the time. This can also allow carcinogenic chemicals to get into our bloodstream and go all over our body. It allows bacteria in, viruses, fungi, chemicals that are thought to be neuroactive chemicals. So things that can lead to anxiety and depression, ADD, ADHD, schizophrenia, all of these things. There is in the medical literature connection between all of these things and our gut microbiome and our gut health. Okay. So to not maintain this barrier is bad news for the human being and our human biology. And again, diseases that are related to this, of course, inflammatory bowel disease or inflammatory bowel syndrome, but also ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, psoriasis, a skin disorder highly related to this, autoimmune disorders like rheumatoid arthritis or Sjögren's syndrome, all of these things are highly related to gut health, our gut microbiome. And of course, both of those things are maintained and kept healthy through fiber that we eat. So the other role that the gut microbiome plays, it plays this protective role, protecting our, single cell or fragile gut lining from the what we call a toxic sludge that goes through our intestines. That is one role, is that protective role. But it also plays a role in producing metabolically active chemicals that relay messages to all other parts of our body. So some of these chemicals that I'm talking about, I always find them shocking. I know it's been said, and I've shared this before in the podcast, but our gut is thought of as a second brain. There are people who talk about and make estimates about the neurons, which are our thinking cells, our nervous cells. They're the ones in our brain and they are in our nerves and they help run our muscles and they do all sorts of things. In our gut, there is as many neurons as there are in a dog's brain. In the human gut, there is as many neurons, as much nervous material as there are in the brain of a dog. Now, my dog isn't out there like making world peace treaties or anything. I mean, my dog's not doing amazing stuff, but my dog does things like she's trained. So I think that the recognition, again, of how important it is to keep our gut healthy, the microbiome plays a key role in this nervous function. The production of GABA and serotonin and dopamine and glutamate, all of these are neurotransmitters. They impact the way we feel, our mood, they impact our sleepiness, they do all sorts of things. The gut plays a key role in production of these. The gut plays a key role in endocannabinoids. So these are hormones or these are neurotransmitters. They help your sleep function. They manage your mood, your appetite, your pain tolerance, your perception of pain. They impact how you learn. They impact your immune function. They impact your reproductive health. Endocannabinoids impact a ton of different things, and they're produced I think, directly by that gut microbiome. But the gut microbiome is producing these chemicals, and then they get into your bloodstream and they go all over and do these things. Other things, they have immunomodulators. The gut microbiome produces immunomodulators that, again, help impact your immune system. And they also produce a chemical called butyrate. It's a bioactive chemical and it messages things certain places, but it also feeds the gut microbiome. But it also feeds the gut cells. So the enterocytes, the actual cell of the gut, is fed these butyrate. This butyrate nourishes those cells. So if you're not having a good quality gut microbiome, you're not getting good, healthy nourishment to your cells of the gut. And then, of course, you're going to have that breakdown, and then you get that leaky gut business, which is bad news. They also produce hormones like GLP hormones. So, this is the hormone that's mimicked with drugs like Ozempic. Again, if you don't have a healthy gut microbiome, you're not going to get all the proper effects of these different chemicals. So, I want to talk about things that damage the gut microbiome. Many of our food additives really are problematic to our gut microbiome. If you remember back in episode number 256, I discussed food additives. Go back and check that out if you're not sure. But recognize food additives are kind of how we identify processed foods. Like the more of these certain types of foods that are present in a single food source, the more likely those foods are ultra processed. They are in that category of ultra processed foods. But some of the clear players in damaging our gut microbiome are emulsifiers, artificial sweeteners, certainly pesticides and herbicides, and then, of course, poor fiber intake. So, emulsifiers, again, I discuss emulsifiers in 256, but emulsifiers are derived from detergents. They are chemicals we put in our food that we derive from detergents, you know, like laundry detergent or dishwasher detergent. They are soaps. It's no wonder they're meant to wash things away, including bacteria, like what makes our gut microbiome. So certainly foods with emulsifiers in it are definitely going to have a negative impact on your gut microbiome. And these are going to be like lecithin, so soy lecithin, there's sunflower lecithin, there's all sorts of lecithins out there. I'm trying to think of some other ones that are typical players, and they're not coming to mind, but certainly I dive into that in episode number 256. So go check that out. Other things that are thought to be harmful to your gut microbiome. There is evidence that artificial sweeteners, so your saccharins, your aspartame, the artificial sweeteners, Splenda, right, sucralose, acesulfame K, all of those are thought to poison your gut microbiome. Now, that research has not been very clearly delineated. So I guess I am hesitant to use the term poison. What is clear in the literature, in the scientific literature, is that artificial sweeteners are negatively impacting your gut microbiome. So they are bad news. So if you're wanting your gut microbiome to be healthy and do all of those amazing things that it does, not feeding it an artificial sweetener on a regular basis is probably going to benefit you in that endeavor. So, certainly pesticides and herbicides, this is a no-brainer when you think about it. They're meant to kill things. They're meant to kill herbicides are meant to kill herbs or plants. Pesticides are meant to kill pests or bugs like bacteria. Okay. So if you're eating non-organic food and organic, and whether it's organic or not organic or grown next door to organic, but all the pesticides get sprayed over, I don't know. Do the best you can though. If you can find a place where you get organic food and you feel confident it's organic, get your food from there because it's very clear that pesticides and herbicides are meant to kill bugs like your microbiome. Okay. And then again, poor fiber intake. And that's what we're talking about today. That's what I'm trying to encourage you to do. The more fiber that you eat, the more you feed your gut microbiome. So, how do you improve the gut microbiome? Again, you eat fiber, you eat lots of it, 30 to 50 grams a day, more if you can. The other important thing is to realize is that we know health is associated with a more diverse microbiome. So I'm going to break that down. More diverse, meaning the more different strains of bacteria that you have in your gut, that is associated with better health. So I like to think about this, like what kind of strains we're talking about, like a garden. So if you think of the gut microbiome like a garden, you want a lot of different plants growing in your garden, not just two or three. You want lots of different plants growing in your garden. If you think about a garden growing just two or three different plants, you're going to use a very narrow type of food or nourishment for those two or three different plants because you'd only need to worry about two or three different needs. If you're growing a garden with a lot of different plants in it, you need to have a variety of different foods for those plants. And the same is true for your gut microbiome. You want a diverse gut microbiome. It is very, very clearly associated with improved health. Okay. And what that then means is the fiber that you feed your gut microbiome needs to be diverse. So, I always say, like, again, I've said it multiple times in the podcast here, 30 grams of fiber a day, and you should be shooting for at least 30 different plants in your diet each week. 30 different fiber sources, right? Because plants are always a source of fiber. 30 different fiber sources each week in your diet. And so that's a challenge I highly recommend you embark on. My brother and I text every day and we shoot for my brother, like it was Wednesday and he was already at like 34 different plants and I'm like struggling at like 18. But we shoot to have multiple different plant foods in our diet and it's kind of like a race and we restart every Sunday and we've been doing this for weeks. It's fun if you can find somebody to do that with. I highly recommend it, but really you do have to stretch your your variety. Like, it's not as easy as you might think, but 30 different plant foods. So this is any kind of plant food. This is certainly fruits and vegetables. This is also nuts and seeds. This is not going to be honey, right? Honey doesn't have fiber in it, even though it's like sort of like a plant. I don't count anything that doesn't have fiber in it. If it's not clearly giving you some fiber, I don't count it because that's probably not feeding your gut microbiome. It's still probably healthy for you, but it's just not counted in that 30. So shoot for 30 grams of fiber a day and 30 different fiber sources, 30 different plant sources in a week. Okay. A healthy gut microbiome is a diverse microbiome. And that diverse microbiome is built on a diversity of fiber sources. So you really have to like make an effort to eat different plant foods. You cannot just eat apples and carrots and broccoli. You are only going to grow a very narrow spectrum of bacteria on that. You need to have a wide variety of them. Other things to do to improve your gut microbiome is stop eating the things that kill it off. Processed foods, ladies, and I've said this, and I mean, like, there's just nothing good about it. They are loaded with all sorts of things that kill your gut microbiome. The food additives that are killing your gut microbiome are the hallmark of processed foods. They make you make too much insulin and give you insulin resistance and diabetes and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and cardiovascular disease. They're inflammatory with their flour and their sugar. They put things into them that make you addicted to the food that's making you sick, and they kill your gut microbiome. Stop eating processed foods. It is bad news. Always start looking at it like what it is. It's a cigarette. One cigarette ain't going to kill me. Cigarettes every day will probably kill me. One M&M, one bag of M&Ms once in a while is not going to kill me. Something along that lines in my mouth every day of the year is going to make me sick. Leave the processed foods behind. Stop eating it. It's literally killing us. And if you're wondering what is processed, if you're having the question, Dr. Vaughn, is this a processed food? One, if you have to ask that, chances are good it's probably a processed food. But if you really want to figure out how to determine is it a processed food or not, ask my one single most important question. Was that food available to the human being 10,000 years ago? If your answer is yes, this food was available on the earth 10,000 years ago, then it's probably not processed. If your answer is no, or well, yeah, if you like scraped it off of blah, 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 then yeah, I would avoid that food. It's likely that food's adding to your illness. Okay. The other way to look is to look at the ingredient list. How many of the ingredients do you know? How many of the ingredients do you know where you would go in the grocery store to buy that ingredient? If there are ingredients on the list of ingredients of a packaged food that you're trying to figure out, is it a problem or is it not? If there are a bunch of things on there that you do not know, I would put it back. It's a processed food. So lastly, I want to talk a little bit about the research that's come out over the last couple of decades. Some of them are more recent. Most of them are pretty old, honestly, but there is, again, more and more information coming out each and every year about the gut microbiome and how its role in our health is being better understood. So first, I want to talk about xanthan gum because I think that the story about xanthan gum really shows you how important the things that you feed your human body over and over and how it impacts your gut microbiome. So when xanthan gum, which is an additive that we put into foods to change its texture and its consistency, it's in a lot of dressings, it's in a lot of different things. It's in some dairy, it's just in a lot of different things. And the impact of that is going to show up here shortly. So it was introduced in the 1960s. And prior to this introduction, the human gut microbiome did not have any bacteria in it. And they looked at not only, American gut microbiome, but they also looked at traditionally eating people, people who follow a more traditional diet to their area. They looked at the gut microbiome of these people and they realized that the microbiome did not have any bacteria that would process, that would like digest xanthan gum. They put it in our foods. They actually didn't even count its calories that were added because we, quote unquote, couldn't digest it. That was in the 1960s, somewhere between the 60s and 80s. It really just started getting into everything. And now there was a study out of the University of Michigan that shows that the that we have developed, we have all, like all of us, and you know, again, this modern way of eating now have a bacteria in our gut that will digest xanthan gum. And that's happened over, you know, 50, 60 years. It was really pretty rapid that that change happened. This is not an evolutionary change. Evolution doesn't occur that quickly. This is a change that's happened because of our environment and our food environment and the things that we're feeding our gut microbiome. So I want to use that study as just pointing out the impact that the food that we eat really does play a huge role on the bacteria that live in your gut. And then lastly, my all-time favorite study about the gut microbiome, because it's just so impactful and shocking about how it really changes our metabolic health. There were microbiome transplantation studies done, and these have been done. There was an initial breakthrough study on it, and then there were multiple repeats on the study. It was repeated and replicated over and over. And now this model is being used to test 100 different other things. So what they did was they had three populations of mice. They had a healthy population of mice, they had an obese population of mice, and they had a diabetic population of mice. And they took the gut microbiome and they did this through fecal transplants. So they pulled out a fecal specimen from one population of mouse and they implanted it into another. So they took the obese mice and they pulled a stool specimen and they transplanted it to the healthy population of mice. They held the diet the same. They never changed the diet. They were feeding the mice, they were able to control what the mice were eating. No change in the diet, just the change in the stool specimen, and the healthy mouse became obese. Okay. They replicated this step with the diabetic mice. They took diabetic mice and they took the healthy population of mice and they transplanted the stool from the diabetic mouse to the healthy mice. And they created diabetes in the healthy mouse despite holding the diet the same throughout this entire procedure, okay, throughout the entire study. This is the power of your gut microbiome and your health, okay? Your gut microbiome and the lack of diversity, the lack of health associated with that will lead to diseases. They're actually seeing this in therapeutics on humans. So they use fecal transplants to treat certain diseases. Like, I don't know, it's Clostridium difficile is the main one. So it's a diarrheal disease that is pretty deadly, and it happens in the hospital, and it's associated with antibiotic use. It's very, very, it's messy, for lack of a better word. It's very messy. And what they've realized is they will transplant a non-ill, somebody who's not sick with Clostridium difficile, they transplant the stool from that person to somebody who is sick with Clostridium difficile. Very high cure rate for that disease, by the way, very good results for the patient who has Clostridium difficile. But what they realize is that if the other patient was diabetic or obese, suddenly we start to see that trait in the person who may not have been those things before when we transplant their stool into this other person. So there's very clearly something happening there. That gut microbiome plays big, big roles in all sorts of parts of our metabolism and our behavior. And it makes sense because if you think back to what I said earlier in the podcast, the gut microbiome is producing all sorts of chemicals. It's producing all sorts of neurotransmitters, GABA, serotonin, dopamine, glutamate. All of these neurotransmitters are being produced by the gut microbiome. It's producing immune modulators. It's producing these endocannabinoids that modulate our sleep, our mood, our appetite, all sorts of things. It's no wonder if you get a bad player in that, you may change what were healthy habits to now not so healthy habits. So I hope what you're taking away from this is the importance of fiber, one, in getting enough. Two, getting variety so that you can have a healthy gut microbiome. That is the important player, as far as I understand it, with fiber. If you're wanting more information about this, check out, these are some scientists that I've, you know, listened to, watched multiple interviews with. Some have books, doing great things in the world of the gut microbiome. People to watch and really even seek out interviews and podcasts, listening to what they have to say. Justin Sonnenberg is a PhD, and he is one of the, you know, top scientists on gut microbiome. Dr. B, I can't say his last name, but I will spell it. It's BulSieWicz. He is a gastroenterologist and he definitely promotes this veggie thing and gut health and gut microbiome and all of that. He's been on a number of different podcasts, including Rich Roll. Really interesting to listen to. Definitely has some really good information about the gut microbiome and our gut health. And then Colleen Cutcliffe is a PhD. She works with a company, it's called Pendulum Health, and they work on probiotics and, of course, making and selling probiotics. But she is a scientist who studies the gut microbiome and she studies it very in depth. And she has a lot of really amazing things and information to say about it. So, lastly, as I always do in every episode, I want to give you my medical disclaimer. If you are on medications for your type 2 diabetes, please be careful as you start to make these changes that I recommend, the changes I recommend in the 14-day guide and the changes I recommend in the podcast episodes. Your medications were started because of the way you ate in the past. And if you change the way you eat, you're going to need to change your medications. If you don't do this, you can end up quite sick, the kind of sick that looks like going to the emergency department, getting admitted to the hospital, and possibly even death. That is not why you're making these changes. You're making these changes because you want to live longer. So make sure you're smart about it. Call the provider who prescribed these medications to you. Let them know I'm making some dietary changes. I'm watching my blood sugars. How shall I share my blood sugars with you? And then wait to hear back from that provider. They will tell you, do they want you to call their nurse? Do they want you to email them in? Do they want you to fax them? Do they want you to drop them off by the office? Do they want you to carrier pigeon them too? They'll let you know what you need to do. But get a clear line of communication open with that provider so you can share your blood sugars with them and you know how to expect to hear medication changes back, what meds they want you to change, how you can expect to hear that message back from them. Okay. Be sure that you do this to keep yourself safe and healthy. I also want to encourage you, like I said at the beginning of the episode, check out the 14 Days to Better Blood Sugars guide. It's at www.delanemd.com/better. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook, and you can access me there. Send me any questions that you might have. You can always email me any questions, Delane@DelaneMD. And lastly, I have an ask. If you are finding benefit from this podcast, if you find the information helpful, if you're seeing results from this podcast, please rate and review it. Please share it on your social media. Please tell a friend about it. 9 out of 10 Americans have insulin resistance. They are on the path to type 2 diabetes if they don't already have it. They need to know that they don't have to be sick for the rest of their life. They don't have to be tied to the American quote unquote healthcare system for the rest of their life. It is possible to live healthy. This podcast is dedicated to getting that word out. If you would help me spread that word by liking, rating, review the podcast, and sharing it with people, that would be wonderful. Until next week. Keep listening, keep avoiding the foods that make you sick, keep making the choices for your vitality, your longevity, and for the life you've always wanted. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.